The golden age of radio is on the air. Morehead State Public Radio presents classic old-time radio programs from radio's golden age, the 1930s through the 1950s. On this program of the Golden Age of Radio, Dr. Kildare deals with a teenage alcoholic. There's a train wreck mystery on Blair of the Mounties and an exciting tale from the World Adventurers Club. Stay tuned for the Golden Age of Radio after today's news from NPR on WMKY and 90.3 FM. Welcome back to the Golden Age of Radio on WMKY at 90.3 FM. Later on today's show, a train wreck mystery on Blair of the Mounties and an exciting tale from the World Adventurers Club. Right now, Lou Ayres and Lionel Barrymore star in an episode of Dr. Kildare as WMKY presents the Golden Age of Radio.
The story of Dr. Kildare.
Whatsoever house I enter, there will I go for the benefit of the sick. Whatsoever things I see or hear concerning the life of men, I will keep silence thereon, counting such things to be held as sacred trust. I will exercise my art solely for the...
The story of Dr. Kildare, starring Lou Ayres and Lionel Barrymore. Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer brought you those famous motion pictures. Now this exciting, heartwarming series is heard on radio. Just a moment, the story of Dr. Kildare. But first, your announcer.
Now, three ways you can help yourself and help the dealer who supplies you with parquet margarine, the delicious Kraft quality spread for bread. First, to save valuable shopping time, know the point value of rationed foods. Parquet margarine, by the way, still requires only 2 ration points a pound. Second, plan menus a week in advance and serve the most nourishing foods available. And, of course, serve economical parquet margarine as often as you can. It's such a splendid energy food and is fortified by Kraft so that every pound contains 9,000 units of vitamin A. And now a third important point. To conserve paper vitally needed in the war, avoid useless wrapping. Don't ask your dealer to wrap packaged foods. And that means the attractive yellow and blue package, too. Yes, the one that contains that delicious, nourishing spread for bread, parquet. That's P-A-R-K-A-Y, parquet margarine.
Now, the story of Dr. Kildare, starring Lou Ayres as Dr. Kildare and Lionel Barrymore as Dr. Gillespie.
Blair General Hospital, one of the great citadels of American medicine. A clump of gray-white buildings planted deep in the heart of New York, the nerve center of medical progress, where great minds and skilled hands wage man's everlasting battle against death and disease. Blair General Hospital, where life begins, where life ends, where life goes on.
All right, one side, please. Let me through here now. Pardon me. Thank you.
I'm sorry.
Now, stand back. Now, will you please move back, everyone? Give her a chance to breathe.
Did you bring a doctor with you, officer?
No. You're the owner of this lunchroom?
Yeah, Hurley's my name. Should have brung a doctor. She's in bad shape.
Yeah, she looks it. What happened?
She walked in here about 5 minutes before midnight, stood there by the door a second, and she fell flat on her face, out cold.
Ever seen her before?
No. And don't get any wrong ideas. She didn't buy it in here.
Didn't buy what?
Smell her breath.
So that's it.
She's drunk. Boy, this younger generation.
Just a kid. 17 at the most. Oh, well. Give me a hand here. We'll get her out to the car.
You going to take her down and book her?
Planning to file charges?
Nah. Just get her out of here. That's all I care.
I think I'll take her over to Blair Hospital. Come on, give me a hand.
Okay.
She seems to be responding to the caffeine a little now, Dr. Gillespie.
Good, Jimmy.
At least that fluttery pulse is beginning to straighten out.
I think you can start giving her the oxygen now. Keep her on it for a couple of hours or so. She'll pull out of it all right.
Yes, Doctor. Oh, Sergeant, it's a good thing you brought her here. That's alcohol in her bloodstream running over 3 parts in 1,000. Well, she really needed a doctor.
Well, I didn't have the heart to run her in, Doc. She looked too young, I guess. Or too pretty.
Find anything in her purse?
Yeah. Match folders and 3 different bars, for one thing. I'll pay him a little visit in the morning. She's an obvious minor.
Any identification, Blaine?
Marion Lewis, according to the card here. Address on the Upper West Side. Nearest relative is her mother, Mrs. Clyde Lewis. Same address.
Well, she certainly had one too many to find her way there tonight.
This girl's had a dozen too many, so it wasn't any accident. She did it on purpose. I wonder why.
Jimmy, stop right there. You're going out on a limb again.
Why should she deliberately set out to knock herself silly? What's behind it?
I don't know, and if you're planning to butt in and try and find out, you can do it alone.
Count you out. That it?
Confound it, yeah, sure. I'm getting too old for this probing into patients' lives.
I see.
It's a case of acute alcoholic poisoning. So, let's leave it that way. You just treat her and release her.
All right. Nobody's pushing you.
Dr. Kildare, the oxygen equipment is coming up in the freight elevator.
Good, Barker. Oh, Dr. Gillespie, do you mind if your able assistant stays here and helps me?
Of course I don't mind. Glad to get rid of old Snoopy for a while.
Well?
I guess I better get going, Jimmy. Want to check with the precinct desk and notify the girl's parents?
All right, Blaine. I'll let you know how she gets along.
I'll walk out with you, Blaine. I never like to interfere with Kildare's cases.
Thank you, Doctor.
Oh, there is one thing, Jimmy, though. Just for the report, of course.
Oh?
As soon as she's conscious, let me know what you find out about her.
Now, it's all right, Marion.
All right. Where am I?
You're in Blair Hospital. I'm Dr. Kildare.
Hospital?
Parker, you can have this inhalator taken out. Bring some hot coffee. I think that'll be better now than the caffeine shot.
All right, Dr. Kildare. I'll be right back.
I wish I could die.
Oh, is that what you were trying to do?
No. But I didn't care whether I did.
17 years old and didn't care whether you lived or not?
I suppose you're like everybody else. You think it's just great to be young. And everything's perfect. Simple and easy.
No, I think it's a fairly confusing world at any age, Marion. But it's a lot worse when you're just finding it out.
No, I found it out all right. How did I get here?
The police brought you.
The police?
Sergeant Blaine, a friend of mine. You passed out in an all-night lunchroom.
What are they going to do to me?
Nothing. There are no charges against you. After you're released in the morning, you can go right out and do the same thing again if you like.
Yes, I probably will. What of it?
Oh, one night you won't get to a doctor soon enough, or a car will run you down or something.
I know. I don't care.
Marion, how long has this been going on?
Drinking? The last few months. Tonight was the worst yet.
Like to tell me the reason?
You wouldn't understand. You'd just think it was silly. Even my father and mother don't understand.
Unfortunately, parents are the last to understand sometimes. It's a mixed up world for them, too, you know.
Not for mine. They got it all figured out. And they despise me. They hate me.
Oh, come in, Parker.
Here's the coffee, Dr. Kildare. The night supervisor had some already made.
Good. Put it here on the table by the bed.
All right, Doctor.
You probably don't want this, Marion, but let's try to get a cup or two down anyway.
Dr. Kildare,
you can have a little cream if you like, but it's better if you drink it black.
Oh, Dr. Kildare.
Well, Dr. Gillespie, you wanted a full report as soon as she was conscious enough to,
Kildare, this is Mr. and Mrs. Lewis, Marion's parents.
Oh, how do you do?
How do you do? How do you
do? I've just been talking to your daughter.
How is she?
How is she? We've already found out she's dead drunk.
Clyde, please.
She's going to be all right, Mrs. Lewis.
Oh, thank heaven.
Oh, Elizabeth, you take up for that kid no matter what she did. She's no good, and that's all there is to it.
I'm afraid I don't agree with you, Mr. Lewis.
I suppose you think you know more about her than I do.
Strangely enough, I think I do.
Jimmy...
Excuse me, Dr. Gillespie. Mr. Lewis, I'd like to talk to you in the outer office for just a minute.
Huh? All right.
Oh, Dr. Gillespie, I knew something like this was going to happen to my daughter.
Mr. Lewis, I've just been talking to your daughter, as you know, and... Well, if I may take the liberty of advising you, I'd like to say that she has a good many problems.
Problems? A girl her age has problems?
Not to you, maybe, but enough to put her in a hospital. The reason I wanted to talk to you out here, away from your wife, is that in time, they might become big enough to kill her if you're not worked out.
And what are all these problems?
Oh, just little ones. Silly ones, in fact. Like, you wanting her to wear clothes too young for her and that she's not allowed to have dates when other girls of her age are. Things like that.
No, that's it. That's what started it all.
Hmm?
One night I caught her sneaking out and meeting some fellow at the corner drugstore. And to lock her up in her room for a month.
Don't you realize you just can't lock a person up and expect them to understand? You've got to talk things over with them.
Talk it over with her? You act like she's already a grown-up woman.
Well, at 17, if she's not well along to being grown up, she never will be. You see, Mr. Lewis, a girl her age is...
All right. Everybody to their own opinion. She'll be ready to leave here in about 10 minutes.
She won't be ready to leave here tonight.
Why not?
Because, Mr. Lewis, I'm not ready to release her.
Well, now, we'll just have to see about that young fellow. I think you've got a few things to learn.
Maybe so, but in my opinion, there are a whole lot of things you ought to learn, Mr. Lewis, and for the sake of that girl, you'd better learn them fast.
All right, Jimmy, I agree with you. You're absolutely right, but confound it, relax. Calm down.
Okay, Dr. Gillespie. I'm sorry I lost my temper, but...
Well. I know. That righteous smugness of his would make anybody.
Yeah.
He can't see any side of it but his own.
Just it. There's nothing really bad about that girl. All she needs is someone who will treat her as a person, who'll listen to her ideas and try to understand her.
Well, I guess her father's given her very little of that. You know, Jimmy, it's the same old business. 9 times out of 10... Alcoholism is a secondary problem. There's always something behind it. Usually the reason isn't as clear-cut as this one. Come in. Well, if it isn't Dr. Carew.
Gentlemen, just step right in, Mrs. Lewis. Mr. Lewis?
Thank you.
By the great horn spoon. Carew, do you sleep in that gardenia?
Certainly not, Dr. Gillespie. Merely because it's 3 o'clock in the morning is no reason not to make oneself presentable when one is called on to appear in public, that is.
Presentable. Yeah.
Dr. Kildare, these people tell me you've precipitated a little crisis.
Well, I...
Carew, inasmuch as Kildare and I have similar opinions in this matter, you may address us collectively.
Oh, dear.
Why, Dr. Gillespie, I thought you were too old for this sort of thing.
Ah, ridiculous. Well, Carew, fire at will.
Now, Dr. Gillespie...
Look, I don't know what this is all about, but I'm only concerned with one thing. Dr. Carew... Suppose you give this young man his orders.
Now, Mr. Lewis, just leave this to me.
Carew, the answer is no.
Dr. Gillespie, please. Now, Dr. Kildare, I'm afraid I'll have to ask you to release the young lady to the custody of her parents at once.
Sorry, but I'm holding her for observation.
observation. She's able to talk. She's able to go home where she belongs.
I'm not so sure that is where she belongs.
Now, Dr. Gilder, we can't let our personal opinions enter into our cases, you know.
Well, then call it a professional opinion. Dr. Carew, she's under my care, and according to law, she stays there until I release her.
Oh, I'm sure you wouldn't take such an unfortunate attitude as...
No, I'll get it. Gilder speaking.
Sergeant Blaine, Jimmy.
Oh, yes, yes.
Sorry to have to tell you this, but there's just been a complaint filed against the Lewis girl for shoplifting.
What? Are you sure it's her?
Can't be any doubt, since the description filed fits both her and the clothes she was wearing.
Well, look, Blaine, can you stall until the morning, and I'll call the shop and try to fix it up or something.
I'll do what I can, Doc. Call me in the morning.
Oh, thanks. Thanks. Goodbye. Well, there's no use having any further discussion about this tonight. I've got a patient who's in trouble, and if I can, I'm going to help her out of it. And regardless of what anyone says, I'm not going to release her until I'm ready. That's final.
We return to the story of Dr. Kildare in just a moment. Continue with the story of Dr. Kildare, starring Lou Ayres as Dr. Kildare and Lionel Barrymore as Dr. Gillespie.
Well, that's that. 4 a.m., Dr. Gillespie. With all the irate parents and our fat-headed superintendent cleared out now, maybe we can finally get some sleep.
Yeah, could be, Jimmy. Of course, we still haven't done much toward clearing up the problem, though.
I know. I can hold them off for the moment by refusing a release for Marion, but that's only temporary. Something has to be done tomorrow.
What about this shoplifting business? It's pretty serious, isn't it?
Serious enough. Apparently, Marion tried on some clothes in a dress shop, then left wearing them while the sales girl was busy at something else.
Ah, the crazy young fool.
Now, Blaine's going to stall the warrant as long as he can. I'll call the shop in the morning, see if I can get them to drop the charges if I guarantee the cost of the clothes.
Getting in pretty deep, aren't you, Jimmy?
Oh, what can you do? Well, I noticed you were right there with me.
Well, that was merely a personal attitude toward Carew. If he'd said black was black, I'd have said it was green.
All right, so it was entirely personal. And it still doesn't answer the question, how are we going to help her?
The girl needs understanding. Problems, it's simple as that. Only the answer's not quite as simple.
No, because the only logical answer is to bring her and her parents together. Right now, they're 1,000 miles apart.
They need some common basis to work from. By the tarnation, aside from the fact that they're distantly related by birth, I don't see one.
Neither do I. Now, I'm going to talk to both sides again in the morning.
Do that, Jimmy, do that. Now, we'd better both get some sleep, or tomorrow you'll look as wilted as Carew's gardenia.
I did it, Dr. Kildare. I only meant to look at the clothes and try them on. And they were so beautiful and so...
So they made you look grown up, huh? And they were clothes you'd picked out yourself?
Yes. And I was so miserable, I didn't care what happened. So I took them.
Took them? You know, we never get anywhere by kidding ourselves, Marion. Is that really what you mean?
No. I stole them. Dr. Kildare, will they send me to jail?
No, they got a check this morning. They've withdrawn the charges.
You sent them... But why? I can't pay you back. I don't have a job. My parents think I'm too young to work.
Well, forget that for the moment. We'll worry about it later. Marion, how did all this start?
Well, I don't know. My folks wouldn't let me have friends at home. Not any at all.
Mm-hmm.
Finally, I got so I'd slip off to the corner drugstore and talk to people. Boys.
Hmm.
It wasn't anything. We just laughed and talked.
I see.
And Dad found out about it and locked me in my room at nights for a month.
So finally it all led up to last night, huh?
Yes.
And a dead end, too, because that isn't the solution, you know.
Dr. Kildare, there isn't any solution. I won't go back home again and have them tell me how low I am, how ungrateful, and how I failed them. And there's nothing else. Nothing.
Well, now, Mr. Lewis, maybe Kildare isn't quite as wrong as you think he is.
Of course he's wrong.
Now, wait a minute. You and I come from what they call the older generation. And the world's changed a lot since we came into it.
Well, maybe the world has, but right and wrong never change.
Oh, that could be. I sometimes wonder, though, if we don't use these words right and wrong pretty loosely. Anything that we're familiar with, that is, that we learned before we were 21 years old, we call right. And anything new that's come along since, we call it wrong. With no basis for it either way.
Well, I can't agree with you, Dr. Gillespie.
Huh.
Everybody knows the things this modern generation does, and I won't have Marion acting the same way.
Well, it seems to me that people have been selling the younger generation short for about 20 centuries or more. But each time they managed to come through it all right.
No, sir, things were different when we were young.
Ah, different, yes, but not necessarily any better. And you know, we didn't do such a hard job of building a new world, Mr. Lewis.
Well, nevertheless, I feel that...
Oh, come on in, Jimmy.
Mr. Lewis.
Good morning, Dr. Kildare.
I guess I owe you an apology. Sorry I lost my temper last night.
Well, I did a little of that myself, as I remember. But I think we can be more reasonable about it this morning.
Oh, I hope so.
And my wife's waiting downstairs, so if you'll fix up that release, we'll just take Marion right along with us.
Well, she's a very hurt girl, Mr. Lewis, or a very sick one, if you want to put it that way.
Well, hangover can give...
Oh, no. It's a lot deeper than that. I do hope you'll be gentle with her, try to talk to her and reason with her.
Look, Kildare, when I was a kid and did anything wrong, my father didn't talk to me. He used the back of a hairbrush. That's reason enough for me.
It's no use, Jimmy. I tried every argument I could think of.
Well, Dr. Kildare, are you going to sign that release or not?
No, I'm not, Mr. Lewis. In my opinion, Marion still needs medical care.
In that case, I'd better see a lawyer.
Whatever you like.
Oh, one other thing, Kildare. I understand you paid off that dress shop for the clothes Marion stole. Of course, I want to make good...
Save it for the funeral.
I see. Well, I'll find out from the police and mail you a check. I pay my debts.
I can tell you one you'll never be able to pay.
I think that's a matter of opinion. Good day, gentlemen.
Well, there goes nothing.
He's hard-headed, all right.
And the worst of it is, he loves his daughter. He's just as hurt as she is.
Sure he is, but he's too confounded stubborn to tolerate any idea but his own.
And there's nothing we can do. If he sees a lawyer, he'll have her back in his custody within 24 hours. I can't support any claim that she needs further medical care.
Well, we did all we could.
Now, come in, Parker.
Dr. Kildare, have you forgotten you're supposed to make the rounds in the crippled children's ward at 11 o'clock?
No, Parker, I was just about to... Say, you know something?
What?
Alarm shot. Parker.
Huh?
Go stop Mr. Lewis and bring him back here. His wife, too. Hurry.
Haven't we seen about enough of this now, Dr. Kildare?
Oh, there's only one more section, Mr. Lewis. It's right ahead of us.
Well, it can't be much different than the others.
Now, here we are. We won't go inside. We can look through these windows along the corridor. These children are all under 5 years old.
Oh, and all of them are handicapped in some way.
Mm-hmm, in various ways. And furthermore, most of them are charity patients, wards of either the hospital or some charitable organization.
Dr. Kildare, I assume you had some point in mind when you insisted we come here with you. I wonder if you'd explain just what it was.
I'm not sure whether I can explain it, Mr. Lewis. I guess I wanted to show you some of the differences in handicaps and to point out that physical handicaps aren't the only kinds. Look, Mr. Lewis, that curly-headed little boy there by the window, the one with braces on both legs.
Yes, I see.
Suppose he was yours, and you didn't happen to like the way he was forced to walk. Now, what would you do? Try to help him to learn to walk his way, or beat him with a hairbrush because he couldn't walk your way.
Well, I...
Can you imagine a child like that being no good?
Well...
Oh, Clyde, we have been wrong sometimes, you know. We failed her as much as she could ever fail us.
I wonder if maybe you aren't right. So many things we could have done and didn't.
So many things we thought were important. Perhaps they're not.
Elizabeth, I think maybe we'd better talk this over.
You'll find a conference room at the end of the corridor. You won't be disturbed.
Well, thanks, Dr. Kildare. Come on, dear.
Well, I'll be darned.
You're the luckiest man I ever saw.
Hmm? Oh, I didn't hear you come up.
Long shot paid off, huh?
Well, that's the way it seems.
And I'm glad it did, but...
But why?
Jimmy, would you mind explaining the logic of your plan?
Well, I don't know. I just had a hunch, I guess, a feeling.
But confound it, Jimmy, it doesn't even make good sense.
Only there's one thing about it, Dr. Gillespie.
What?
It worked.
Now, once again, the story of Dr. Kildare, starring Lou Ayres as Dr. Kildare and Lionel Barrymore as Dr. Gillespie.
Dr. Gillespie.
Confound it, Parker. Can't Kildare and I have 5 minutes' conversation without you poking your long nose in?
Well,
never mind. What do you want?
Well, Dr. Carew's outside there. Shall I show him in?
Show him in, show him out. I don't care where you show him.
Oh.
I think I know what he wants. I doubt if he's heard it.
Oh, let's pour it on him, Jimmy.
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Well, Jimmy, look, if it isn't Dr. Carew.
Yes, I believe it is at that.
Gentlemen, please.
Step into our parlor, Carew. Speak up. What's on your mind?
Gentlemen, I've refrained from exercising my authority, but there can be no more quibbling now, no more dilly-dallying.
Isn't that word dillying, dallying, Dr. Gillespie? Well,
Jimmy, I think you're right.
Gentlemen, that girl... I want her released at once.
I guess he means you, Jimmy. I'm not holding any girl.
Dr. Gillespie, you know very well who I mean. It's that Marion Lewis girl.
Lewis? Marion Lewis?
Well, there is something familiar about that name.
Oh, I remember, Dr. Gillespie. That's the girl who left with her parents right after lunch.
Dr. Kildare, I won't listen to any of... She what?
You know, I don't think Dr. Carew really knows what's going on around here.
Oh, dear. But I thought... I mean, you said that... But last night you... Oh, dear. Oh, dear, 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 dear.
Parker, open the door for Dr. Carew. He's trying to walk through the back of the closet.
You have just heard the story of Dr. Kildare, starring Lou Ayres and Lionel Barrymore. This program was written by Les Crutchfield and directed by William P. Russo. Original music was composed and conducted by Walter Schumann. Supporting cast included Virginia Gregg, Ted Osborne, Lorene Tuttle, Tal Avery, Barbara Ruick, and Jack Crucian. Dick Joy speaking.
You're listening to The Golden Age of Radio on WMKY with Lou Ayres and Lionel Barrymore starring in an episode of Dr. Kildare. Stay tuned for more classic old-time radio from the 1930s through the 1950s when The Golden Age of Radio continues on Morehead State Public Radio, WMKY at 90.3 FM. Thank you. Welcome back to the Golden Age of Radio on WMKY at 90.3 FM. Stay tuned for an exciting tale from the World Adventurers Club. But right now, there's a train wreck mystery on this episode of Blair of the Mounties on the Golden Age of Radio.
Blair of the Mounties, a story of the Royal Northwest Mounted Police. We present episode 12 in the dramatic series, Blair of the Mounties. Our story takes us back to August 1914, the outbreak of war. As the news of the declaration of war against Imperial Germany echoes round the world, the men of the great Dominion spring to arms in support of the motherland. All over Canada, men swarm to the training camps. Soon the troop movement from the far west begins. By night and day, the troop trains thunder eastward, carrying the men of the 1st Canadian Division on the initial stage of their journey to the battlefront. Even at this early date, the long arm of the German General Staff reaches out to distant Canada. Enemy agents begin to slip over the Canadian border, seeking to interfere with the movement of troops. As our scene opens, we find Inspector Blair busy with a new and interesting problem.
Morning, Inspector.
Oh, good morning, Tenant. Anything stirring?
No, it's all quiet. It's the dullest job I ever ran into.
Yes, it hasn't been very exciting, but we've only had supply and medical trains so far. We get the first real troop trains tomorrow night, 4 sections.
Yes, I know, but what of it? All this fool talk of spies looks rather stupid.
You never know, Tenant. According to these messages coming through, there's lots of spy activity across the border. And, yes, how about that Fisher case?
Fisher? Oh, yes. I suppose he's another harmless farmer with a German accent visiting friends in Canada.
Maybe. Military intelligence at Ottawa were very much interested in him. He crossed the border at Pembina last Thursday. But unless he shows up, it's no concern of ours.
Oh, well. He's here all right.
What?
Mm-hmm. But he's gone west today on 97.
Anything suspicious?
No, except that he called for a letter at the post office here yesterday.
Did you get anything?
No, but I did.
What do you mean?
Oh, a letter came for him after he'd gone. I grabbed it.
That's rather irregular, Tenant.
Possibly, but if I'd waited for a requisition, it might take weeks.
Yeah, that's right. Let's have a look. Henry Fisher, General Delivery, Moose Jaw. Mailed from Clover Point.
That's on the main line about 100 miles west of here.
All right, let's open that letter.
Now who's irregular?
Oh, come on, let's have it.
All right, here we go.
Well, for the love of Mike,
well,
look
what's
here.
Wrong? What's wrong?
Why, just a blank sheet of paper. Hand me that bottle of developer, Tenant.
All right. Headlines, dangerous enemy agent foiled by watchful eye of gallant police.
Oh, shut up, Tenant. Give me some of that developer.
All right.
Let's soak a bit. I'm afraid there's nothing on it.
Doesn't look like it.
Well, better dry it off and put it through the roller. Or, hold on, Tenant. Try a little of that special developer. Just a few drops. It's in the green bottle.
All right. There you are.
That's no good either. Well...
Yeah, wait a minute. Look, there's a line coming
up. So it is.
Yes. And there's another line, see? Why, it's a plan or drawing of some sort.
Yes.
See now? There's a sloping bank. Why, it's a drawing of a bridge.
Sure enough, and a railroad bridge at that. Tenant, I believe we've got something. Hand me that telephone. Hello? Get me CPR. Superintendent's office. Mr. Clark. Hurry up. Police call. Yes. Inspector Blair speaking. Right. Hurry, please. Hello? That's you, Billy? This is Blair. Listen. I want Paddy Moran, the roadmaster. Is he in town? Fine. Ask him to come over, will you? Leland Hotel, room 17. Oh, he's in the hotel. You'll get him for me? Thanks, Billy. Goodbye. That's fine. Old Paddy's coming right in.
Well, you think you can tell us where that bridge is? I doubt it myself.
No, we can try him anyway. Have we any whiskey around?
Sure, there's a couple of bottles of Spey Royal in the grip.
Good, better break out a bottle. Paddy's a thirsty old devil. Now, that's Paddy, I guess. Let him in, Tenant.
All right.
Well, now, and how are you,
Paddy?
Inspector, me boy?
How are you?
I'm fine, but it's terrible dry weather we're having. With Jabez, I don't know when I've seen it so dry. What's that you have there, Inspector? The drawing?
Yes, what I wanted to see you about. Ever see that bridge before?
Did I ever see it? Well, sure, it's just a threshold bridge.
Yes, but Paddy, isn't there some way to identify it?
Give it a chance that I can see it. Hold on. There's something familiar about
you
that.
You think you know it?
No, I wouldn't say that. Just hand me that bottle now. thank you. I always did say that a thirsty man has a poor
yes,
man.
Yes, but what about that bridge, Paddy?
Begorra. I have it. Huh? You see that crooked pile under the threshold?
Yes.
Well, that's the same pile I've been after the bridge department to change this 3 months. Sure, I know I'd get it.
But, Paddy, the bridge, where is the confounded thing?
Easy now, Inspector. I was coming to that. Sure, and it's the bridge at Owl Creek Siding, 7 miles beyond Clover Point.
Clover Point?
Sure, that's it.
Fine. Now, listen, Paddy, we've got 4 troop trains coming through tomorrow night. We have some reason to suspect that an attempt will be made to wreck those trains at that bridge.
No, the devil, you say?
Yes, Tennant and I will be going west on number 3 tonight.
Well done, now.
I tell you, Inspector, there's not a sign of any attempt to tamper with that bridge. Paddy and I went over it.
Yeah, that's right now.
Nothing unusual at all? Well, maybe we're on the wrong track about that bridge.
What do you mean?
Supposing you wanted to wreck a train, Paddy, near this bridge.
Me wreck a train, is it?
Well, just supposing.
Hey, and it's an elegant place to do it.
That's what I thought.
Sure, now you see the deep ravine with a bridge over.
Yes?
And you see beyond the bridge, there's a deep cutting.
I see it.
Well, before the train comes to the cutting, there's a heavy grade and the cutting has a curve.
I see the idea. The engineer can't see the bridge until he's within 100 feet of it.
That's right. All they'd need to do is just to throw a rail. Sure, now, that'd do it. And I'll tell you, they picked the elegantest place in the wreck of the whole division.
Thanks, Paddy. That's what I wanted to know. How long did it take them to chip the rail?
Just a couple of minutes to do for a man that knew how.
Well, we've got 4 trains tonight running 10 minutes apart.
And a nice mess it'd be if they got one of them. The tour'll be on the top of them before they'd know anything about it.
What troops are coming? I suppose 6 Vancouver rifles, Gordon Highlanders from Victoria, and the Yukon machine gunners.
Bedad, them boys is too good to lose.
I should say so. Tennant?
Yes, sir?
Who's on patrol?
Well, there's Madden and Forsyth.
I see. Of course, this may be a false alarm. Anyhow, the first train will make Dunster about 10:15. The operator at the siding will give us the warning. Then we'll have to keep our eyes skinned. We've 4 hours yet.
Hey, the holy poker. If I catch one of them trying to fool with that track, I'll spifflicate him.
Fine. We'll see you at the siding. 9:30, Paddy.
Sure. I'll be with you.
Any report of that first two Bexler, operator?
Not yet, Inspector. She was through Medicine Hat on schedule. This way, Inspector. We'll go over the thistle.
What's that train lamp for, Paddy?
Well, now we might need it to be signaling a train.
Well, that's one on me, Paddy. I never thought of that.
You didn't. Sure, and it's a fine detective you are now. Look out now. Watch your step on the bridge.
All right. Pretty dark.
Here you are, Inspector. There's a good view of the bridge from here.
Yes, this'll do. Let's see, Paddy. It'll take about an hour for those trains to pass, won't
it? Now it's little you know about railroading. They'll be crowding each other, I'm thinking. There you are now. There's the first train. Just hitting the grid.
Yes, that'll be her, all right.
Sure, she'll be in the cutting in a minute. Och, and there she goes. Give her a sign of any trouble.
Yes, just a false alarm. Listen, what's that? Surely not the second train.
Hey, didn't I tell you? She's right on top of the first train.
And look, listen, what's that at the track?
They got it. Somebody after throwing a rail down by the bridge.
Why, look, they've seen the signal. She's stopping. She's stopping. They've seen it.
There you are. She's all fixed.
Thanks, Paddy. I don't know what we'd have done without you.
You've heard episode 12 in the dramatic series, Blair of the Mounties.
Adventurers Club bids you welcome. You are invited to join an informal gathering of this international organization whose members have explored all the strange lands of the earth, from the Russian steppes to Madagascar. Here you will meet men who have dared adventure in every form. Explorers, travelers, big game hunters, war correspondents, and international diplomats. The members of the club invite you to pull up a chair and listen to a tale of the Royal Road to Adventure.
Up with the Jolly Roger, boys, and off we go to sea. There's heaps of fun when the Jolly Roger's hung and the wind is on the lee. And the wind is on the lee. Blow high, it's off to sea we go. Without a single light in the pale moonlight. us bold buccaneers will go.
Here's to each man and the jolly, jolly crew.
We'll sail the deep blue sea, we'll sail the deep blue sea.
Have you met Mr. Nelson?
I think not. How do you do, sir?
How do you do, Doctor?
Our friend Nelson joined the club while you were away on your last expedition, Doctor.
Oh, is that so?
Yes.
I've heard of that expedition in New Guinea, wasn't it?
Yes, Papua, to be exact. Few people realize that Papua is the second largest island in the world, second only to Australia. Mention Papua, and most people visualize it as a small island of the South Seas. Instead, it's an immense place of bush and jungles and mountains. It's due north of Australia and just below the equator. I notice that most of the cartographers designate it as New Guinea, but I prefer the original name of Papua.
Gentlemen, I suggest that we draw up some chairs and ask Dr. Roberts to go on with his story of Papua.
Oh, well, now, just a minute.
Please.
I had no intention of giving a discourse on that expedition.
I'm afraid you can't avoid it, Doctor.
It's been 6 months, and you've circled the globe since you visited the club, Doctor. I think he's due to explain where he's been. How about it, boys?
That's right. It's up to you, Doctor.
Come on, Doctor, please. Now, give an account of it.
Well, gentlemen, this is very impromptu, but if you do want to hear about Papua, I can tell you some things that'll make your hair stand on end. First of all, my object in going into the little-known interior of that country was to reach a native tribe that had not been seen by white men. It was my desire to visit them as a friend, observe their mode of life, and, if possible, bring back to civilization with me one or two of these natives who had never been touched by the white man's world. This I succeeded in doing, but in a method that I never anticipated. If I'd have foreseen the perils of that trip, I doubt if I could have been forced to take it.
Yes, that's what you say now. But if you had it to do all over again, I'll wager you'd be ready to leave for Papua today.
Perhaps so. There's no appeal like that of adventure. At any rate, I had an unusual expedition. I wanted to make speed, and I found speed absolutely impossible. It takes weeks to batter through the jungle, and the rivers are sluggish and full of crocodiles. So I tried a new idea. I got a small hydroplane, fitted it out at Mabu on the coast with a crew of two white men, and I was ready for Papua.
You mean to say there were only three men, including yourself, in your expedition?
That's all. With the hydroplane, we could fly over the jungles as long as we followed the general course of the river. Whenever we wished to land, it was a case of dropping down on the surface of the water. I carried enough supplies for a week of cruising and figured that I could accomplish the purpose of the expedition in that time. Simple, wasn't it?
An excellent idea.
I had a base established about 200 miles upstream, where I could replenish gasoline and other supplies. And then we headed the plane's nose for the heart of the unknown. My companions were Jackson, a pilot, and Gale, a navigator. For hours, we flew over an impassable jungle, always keeping within sight of a broad river in case we had to make an emergency landing. Several times we dropped down at villages. They had never seen an aeroplane before, and most of these natives were panic-stricken. As we progressed toward the interior, all signs of life disappeared, and I knew that we had passed the farthest exploration point of white men. To look down upon a land that no man of your race has ever seen before is a thrill, gentlemen, that cannot be described, but must be experienced.
That must be a moment that comes once in a lifetime.
And of course you had no idea what you might encounter. A tropical storm would have been mighty dangerous.
Well, we were very lucky. After 8 hours of flying, we saw a huge native village below us. We circled the place and decided to risk a landing. We had no means of knowing if the natives were hostile, but we decided to gamble our skill with theirs, and so we dropped down. Nicely done, Gale. Now, let's taxi up there to what appears to be the landing place for the native dugout.
Yes, sir. I don't think those natives are hostile, Dr. Roberts.
Neither do I, sir. But I wish they showed a little more fear.
They certainly don't run for their lives the way most of them did.
I'll cut off the engine, sir, and bring her to by that large dugout.
That's right. Don't get too close to shore.
Look at them. They're all crowding down to meet us.
They're yelling something. Listen. Well, that means little to me.
I think they're trying to welcome us. And that's the glad to see us, sir.
Oh, there comes a chief, all dressed up in war paint and feathers. You boys keep an eye on him and don't let any of them touch the plane.
Well, I can see him. Find out about the people.
Could you speak their language, Doctor?
No. And I won't bore you, gentlemen, with the tedious procedure of trying to converse with those natives. I use two or three combined native dialects. And by making the savage repeat many times and by guessing at almost half the words, I gathered his meaning. It seems that he was not the chief, but a kind of medicine man. He was a doctor for his people, as I am for mine.
But unfortunately, you weren't from the same medical college.
Not by a wide margin. But he made me understand that his chief was very ill, and he had cast a spell to cure the chief. He thought that our appearance out of a clear sky, so to speak, was a token of good. He thought I had come to cure his chief, and he told the village that.
Oh, so that's why they weren't antagonistic.
Exactly. They thought I was some strange god that their medicine man had conjured to come and cure the dying chief. I was really a guest of honor.
And did you visit the stricken chief, Doctor?
I had to. There was no alternative. I left Gale with the plane, and Jackson and I went ashore. One look at the chief, and I knew he was a goner. It was beyond the power of medicine to save him. But I couldn't leave the village without incurring the natives' anger, so we spent the night ashore. I had Gale moor the plane securely, and the three of us were given a crude kind of a hut in the middle of the village.
Well, so far, so good.
I would say that luck was with you.
So I hoped. But in the middle of the night, a terrible pandemonium broke out. There was yelling and screaming and drum beating, and we didn't know what to make of it. The medicine man appeared and motioned for us to follow him. He led us to a large elliptical hut, and we followed him inside. At first, I couldn't see much. But gradually, I became aware of the contents of that awful hut. It was lined with thousands of human heads, all grinning, or shrunken and distorted in the most horrible grimaces, as if they had died in terrible agony.
Great Scott!
There we were, surrounded by 1,000 mummified heads. Dozens of natives were watching us, and it was only too obvious that our heads were to be added to those of that terrible hut.
Phew! I thought they looked upon you as a god.
They did at first. But the medicine man told us that the chief had died an hour ago, and now they blamed us for his death. They meant to murder us as a sacrifice to the dead chief. They brandished huge clubs and knives, and in another minute we'd have been decapitated. Of course, in a moment like that, one acts first and thinks later. With a yell that equaled that of any of the savages, I whipped out a revolver and shot three of them on the spot. Justin did the same thing. And Gale picked up a war club and smashed a huge hole in the side of the hut. This sudden attack of ours surprised the natives for a brief moment, and we made a break for our lives. We rushed to the river in the plane, firing at anything we could see. Behind us, 1,000 murderous, yelling headhunters came whooping.
This way, men. Here's the river.
They're right behind us.
Look, the plane's gone. We've lost the plane. It's gone.
What?
They cut the plane at me. We're done for. We can't escape.
Oh, there must have sunk it.
This way, men. Plunge into the river. We haven't a chance if we stay on the bank. Follow me.
Look down the stream.
That's it.
It's a plane.
Somebody's on it.
Hey, he's trying to wreck it. After them.
Follow them. We must save that plane or die.
It's smashing. Here, grab that rope.
They're trying to get away.
I got one. Follow.
Find it in a control seat.
Come over, Jackson.
I think we've wrecked the motor.
Try again.
Oh, there'll be orders in a minute. Hurry. We're off. She works. She
down
works.
Downstream.
Down, Flashboy. Here we come.
Get her clear, Gale, and get her away fast. If you ever took off in your life, do it now.
Well, that was a lively night in Papua.
That would be enough to last me a lifetime.
We were all pretty scared, but we didn't have time to think about it. I'd say it was the most thrilling experience in my career. And in spite of our hurried exit, the expedition was successful. You remember I told you I wanted to bring one of the savages back to civilization with me?
Yes.
Well, I did. One of those who was trying to wreck the plane didn't get off in time. We were up in the air, and I hauled him on board and took him back to civilization as Exhibit A of a trip I shall never forget.
Well, Dr. Roberts, that's a story I shall never forget.
Nor I.
Oh, it's an episode that might have happened to anyone. A dozen members of this club might tell a better story.
I doubt it. But nevertheless, I don't intend to be absent at the next meeting. It's up to Jack Palmer to tell the next adventure story.
Yes, Jack, you're next. you're going to tell us what you've been doing in China for the last 2 years. And that is going to be a story.
The mighty jungle lord comes with a flashing sword, crashing on footsteps of thunder, thunder. Through this cathedral vast, there rings a trumpet blast, and all of nature pauses to wonder. Oh, swiftly the little fleeting deer leap at the sound of following feet, leaping to fly, fearing to die. Oh, in the jungle deep, and the river lies
And as we say goodbye, the World Adventurers Club invites you to come to another meeting and hear one of its members tell of his strange adventures in strange lands.
The Golden Age of Radio on WMKY in a tale from the World Adventurers Club. We also heard an episode of Blair of the Mounties, first broadcast on April 18, 1938. This has been the Golden Age of Radio, classic old-time radio programs from the 1930s through the 1950s. Material for this program provided by the Internet Archive, an online nonprofit library of books, movies, music, and old-time radio shows on the web at archive.org. Tune in again for the Golden Age of Radio next week at the same time and channel on WMKY at 90.3 FM and online at WMKY.org.